I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the annual Spirit and Place Festival. We're going to focus our attention on festival events that explore the Jewish faith. My guests are Lindsay Mintz, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Merer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, Communications Coordinator at JCRC. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits at WFYI.org, find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the annual Spirit and Place Festival today on No Limits. We're going to focus particularly on events that explore the Jewish faith. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Lindsay Mintz. She is Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Merer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, Communications Coordinator at the Jewish Community Relations Council. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here. So let's start first. We probably ought to talk about, we got a lot we're going to have to talk about today, a lot of events. And the sort of, I think, larger subject of tolerance and understanding and how we get to places like that. But that's fairly weighty stuff, so I think probably we ought to talk about the logistics of the festival first, what the events are, get those out of the way. And it looks like everybody is pointing at you, Aaron, so it looks like that's your job.
Yes, I will take that one. So this is the 23rd year for Spirit and Place. It's the largest collaborative festival in the Indianapolis area that uses the arts, religion, humanities, and sciences to come together and work in ways that combine all of these different intersections, really. And that's why this year's theme is perfect. This year's theme is intersection, which is how do we look at each other's identities and each other's different demographics and ideas to be able to really see how we all are not so different.
And what events in particular are we talking about for this year's festival?
Yeah, so JCRC led to this year. The first one, which was on Monday, was Hummus and Happiness, which explored how the food hummus really worked to help bring different cultures together. So we partnered with the Muslim Alliance, Kendall's Holocaust Museum, and the Center for Interfaith Cooperation. And it was a beautiful event that really was able to uplift many different people's voices who find the food hummus so important to them. And then tonight, this evening, at the Central Library at 6:30, the doors will open. We will have Jewish Ann, which is a program that explores the diverse voices within the Jewish community. So that can be an intersection of being Black and Jewish, Latino and Jewish, LGBT and Jewish, and many other multiple combinations.
So I'm going to ask, we have seen, obviously, in the past few years, a significant resurgence of anti-Semitism, basically intolerance of all kinds. And I'm using the word resurgence because we can't really argue that it ever went away. But it seems to be more manifest now. I'd like your thoughts on why that might be. I'll start with Lindsay, but I want to hear everybody on this.
Oh, thank you. First, let me say thank you. I'm thrilled to be on the show. I lament sometimes that I'm the one people talk to when they want to talk about anti-Semitism, because there's so much.
It's your fault. That ought to be said. Yeah.
Right. There is so much beauty to celebrate when we are talking about the Jewish community and American Jews. And it's true. Over the last several years, more and more of the conversations I'm having as the JCRC director find their way into conversations about the rise in anti-Semitism. We have been, the JCRC as the Jewish community's public policy arm and intergroup and interfaith relations arm, one of the things that we do is track anti-Semitic incidents. And we have, without a doubt, recorded an uptick, most precipitously over the last couple years, but it started 2013, 2014, 2015. And there are lots of reasons for the why, and lots of people that one or some might want to, you know, cast blame, you know, to help us understand it. Well, there must be a reason. There must be someone to blame. And I think generally their society right now, for some reason, is giving more permission to hate speech, to then acting on the kind of rhetoric that people are hearing or reading in their Facebook feeds and Twitter feeds. And we are receiving more and more phone calls from parents of Jewish kids as early as elementary school and middle school, where kids are approached, bullied, attacked, called out. It is a different experience today in 2018 growing up Jewish than it was when I was growing up, you know, 30 years ago.
Aviva.
Sure. So I think all forms of hatred are really born from ignorance, and anti-Semitism is no different, that there is a misunderstanding as to who we are as people.
You're anticipating my next question, but please go
ahead. I'm just one step ahead.
You are.
But I really do think that anti-Semitism is no different, that it comes from ignorance and a lack of understanding. And that's why I think the festival tonight is just going to be so exciting to participate in this Jewish And festival. I am a B'nai Israel Jew from India. My grandfather built the first synagogue in New Delhi and acted as the spiritual leader there during his time there. And I think by bringing something like Jewish And to the community, it will help to educate and really teach people that we are members of the greater Indianapolis community, members of society, and we are contributing to our cities in ways just like everybody else. So really to help dispel the myth, I think we do so through education. I will tell you that personally, I dislike the word tolerance. I think that tolerance is a grave understatement. Mm-hmm. I think that tolerance should never be the goal, but really acceptance and understanding and treating one another the way we want to be treated. And as Jews, we do that by leading by example, that if we teach people how we want to be treated by treating one another and other people with kindness and acceptance and understanding, then hopefully we will reap what we sow.
Aaron.
Yeah, I think that anti-Semitism is a part of this, and it's a lot of what Aviva said, this larger social issue that's going on currently. And we're seeing a resurgence of hate that's acceptable in our society, no matter what form it is. I think that right now it's very focused on anti-Semitism, but we've seen it within the LGBT community. We've seen it within the Black community. We've seen it within the Latino and the immigrant community, among many, many other communities in our country. And I think it goes back to also what Aviva was saying, and I'm going to pick on your word a little bit. I actually like empathy better than acceptance,
right?
Because that's
right.
Your ability to be able to understand someone else's emotion on a deeper level. And I think that we have lost our ability within, and this is what I wrote in my papers in college on, was our ability to teach our kids how to be empathetic. And that's something that I don't think until we get back to that point, we're going to necessarily be able to fight hate fully.
Aviva, I want to pick up on your point, and I should remind our listeners we're talking about the Spirit and Place Festival today on No Limits, and specifically about the pieces of the Spirit and Place Festival that focus on exploring the Jewish faith. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. I want to focus on something you said, because it did anticipate my next line of questioning,
sure.
Which really is, what is the biggest misperception, the thing that kind of fuels this irrationality?
Sure. I'll also offer both Lindsay and Aaron an opportunity to speak to that. But I do think that Jews very often get cast in this light as being other, and being other can also lead people to think that Jews have this misconception or perception of being a light unto nations and being better than other nations. Truthfully, the way to interpret being a light unto other nations is to bring kindness and light to the world, right? And to carry ourselves with empathy and welcome the stranger, for we were strangers in the land of Egypt. These are all pillars of who we are as a people. But when you take those prophetic words and you twist them into the Jewish community thinking that they are somehow superior to other communities, it can very quickly lead to a downward spiral of anti-Semitism. At least that's my impression.
Let me go to Aaron. I'll give you the last word on it, Lindsay. Okay.
Yeah, I think you said it so beautifully, honestly, Aviva, because that's also one reason that I got involved in the work of the JCRC. I knew that we were going to be fighting anti-Semitism when I came on and other forms of hate. And that's because of the principles that I was taught growing up as a Jew. One of my favorite quotes comes from the Talmud, which is, to save a life is as if you saved the world. And this places value on that every life is important. And the converse to that in the Talmud is that if you destroy a life, it's as if you destroyed the whole world. So I think that these two quotes really impacted my advocacy work and the reason that I went and started working at the JCRC. And we've been able to have these conversations not just about anti-Semitism, but Islamophobia, homophobia, xenophobia, racism, and through coalition building and just forming real relationships with other partners in the community.
Lindsay.
And I'm going to pick up right where Aaron left off. Your question was, what's the biggest misperception that might lead to anti-Semitic thoughts? And the whole field of academia, of the study of anti-Semitism, is replete with text. In Bloomington, we have the country's only institute for the study of contemporary anti-Semitism. And as a Jewish studies major who studied this, I can tell you that it's hard to do it in a sound bite. I will say...
Don't feel trapped. This is talk radio for people with attention spans. So you can speak in paragraphs here.
Be careful what you offer me, John. The history of anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism has been called the longest hatred for a reason. Mm-hmm. We can go back 2,000 years. We can go back 1,000 years. The anti-Semitic tropes that we are seeing surface and resurface today in 2018, most members of the Jewish community hear the dog whistles and can connect it to the anti-Semitic tropes of the 20th century, of the medieval, of anti-Judaism during the early Christian period. So the danger of anti-Semitism is that it finds a new outfit to wear, some new words to describe it, and it becomes acceptable in society. And that's really where the biggest danger is. And picking up on Aaron's last comment about relationship building, you know, the Jewish community recognizes that in order for everybody out there who's not Jewish to know us and to have empathy and start to understand who are members of the Jewish community, we have an obligation to go out and introduce ourselves and to work on coalitions and to sit down at communal tables and engage and build relationships, relationship by relationship by relationship. And that's one of the things that we're so excited about doing with Spirit in Place. The collaboration that's involved really brings the Jewish community and members of the Jewish community to the community at large and helps everybody recognize we are members of the community like everybody else that have, you know, a unique story or identity and an intersection of identities to share.
We are talking today on No Limits about the annual Spirit in Place Festival. We're focusing our attention on events that explore the Jewish faith, but we're also really talking about the larger question of why we're seeing a rise in anti-Semitism today and what we can do to create a more meaningful dialogue and understanding between faiths. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Lindsay Mintz. She is Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Mehrer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, Communications Coordinator at the JCRC. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the annual Spirit in Place Festival. Specifically, we're talking about events that explore the Jewish faith that are part of the Spirit in Place Festival. More largely, we're talking about how we arrive at a greater understanding as people who share the same community. My guests are Lindsay Mintz, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Mehrer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, Communications Coordinator at the JCRC. So before we went to the break, Lindsay, you mentioned that people who are part of the Jewish community can hear the dog whistles. First, we probably ought to explain what a dog whistle is. Normally, we hear this context, obviously, when we're talking about race, but it exists when we're talking about faith as well.
Yeah, I think that for any minority community, their ears are attuned to hear things that are said that the greater community may miss, not because they are actively being anti-Semitic or racist or homophobic or Islamophobic, but because their ears aren't attuned to hear the things that people within that community can hear. So we are, you know, when we see a meme come through our Facebook feed with members of the Jewish community who are prominent, whether locally or nationally, with their faces put on a pile of money, with there being some insinuation that there is a global Jewish conspiracy to take over or to manipulate or to be the quote-unquote puppet master, whether we're talking about Wall Street or Washington or Hollywood, that 2018 dog whistle does have its connection to similar tropes that have been used for 2,000 years about what is obviously a very false trope that claims that members of the Jewish community have some power that people can't see and are dangerous.
So let me break it down so that people are getting this. Is maybe walk me through why it is that the attempt that George Soros, for example, would make to use his money to influence our political discussions or public policies is different than that of the Koch brothers or other very wealthy Americans. And there's been a long, you know, it seems like he in particular raises a different level of ire than any other wealthy American who's doing that. Is that one of the dog whistles?
Absolutely.
I mean, when they're talking about Soros. Okay, so walk me, I'm going to ask Aviva and Aaron to jump in here too. Walk me through how that that dog whistle works then. They're all pointing at each other.
I think, and Lindsay, you can jump in whenever. I think one of the biggest things that we've seen is the way that this played out in the last couple of weeks, especially leading up to the tragedy in Pittsburgh, which was that there were a lot of dog whistles about him funding the migrant caravan that came, that was coming and is heading its way to the United States. And that because of that, someone from the far right posted on a social network platform that he was tired of this and he was going to protect his people, and went and shot 11 Jews while attending Shabbat service. So it's not that far of a jump to see how that overlap of globalist George Soros and everything compiled together to actually be very anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm. Aviva and Lindsay, I sensed you both had a little more you wanted to say on this. I'll give Aviva
I think I think there are – listen, there are those in the world, in politics, who are going to behave in ways that are ethically questionable. And I, if I hear your question correctly, you're asking why is it more ethically questionable when a Jew does it?
Yes.
That why
basically,
is it – right. Why is
it
that people
– yes.
Sure. That people – people that perhaps it's interpreted that way or it's framed that way. And I think that's a really complicated question, and I don't know that there's – a right answer so much as to say that historically, unfortunately, the Jewish people have been the scapegoat of hatred of any kind. And it's not we are let me just clarify. We are certainly not the only people in history to have suffered. Mm. We know that and we see that. But I do think that frequently just kind of picking on the smallest group, the that you, whether you perceive it as a weaker group or something like that, it's just an easier out. I think I think we are sometimes easier to blame because we, if I get this correct, and Lindsay will correct me, but I believe we're 2% of the population. 2%, right? That's pretty easy to pick on.
And understanding anti-Semitism. And I reflected very briefly on this when we had our community memorial gathering less than 48 hours after the Pittsburgh massacre. Nearly 2,000 people came together at Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, the interfaith community, of course, the broadest swath of the Jewish community. And in my brief remarks, I shared that as the coalition building arm of the Jewish community, where my job is to build relationships, my job is to know people in different faith communities and ethnic communities. And that's the best part of my job, when I get to sit down and say, what can we work on together? Are both of our communities interested in housing issues or transportation issues or healthcare issues or children's issues? And I come to it with, you know, the prophets behind me commanding me to take care of those most in need. And how do we actualize that today in our advocacy work? But I know in the back of my head that building a relationship is something that I love to do. But if I've done it well, I create an atmosphere that allows the other person to ask me that question they don't necessarily feel comfortable asking a member of the Jewish community. I've always wanted to ask this. Can I ask you this? Are you sure? And of course, I always say yes. Those are the questions that I want. And oftentimes, there are questions about why. Why are the Jews placed out as a scapegoat so regularly? What help me understand a complicated relationship. Mm-hmm. Help me understand. And it is not easy. It is not easy to explain when we are a very small part of the overall population, global population, how it is that anti-Jewish sentiment can emerge from both ends of the political spectrum, the very far fringes of both ends of the political spectrum. And in a way, I want to differentiate anti-Semitism from racism, homophobia, mm-hmm. xenophobia, without denigrating those awful forms of racism as well. But there is something unique about anti-Semitism because it, I've been reading articles lately that describe it as it's a form of racism that punches up rather than punches down, that other minority groups are castigated unfairly, inaccurately, for being weaker or less able or overrunning mm-hmm. or overtaking. There's something about the Jewish community when racism is leveled at Jews, it is a punching up.
Yeah, the stereotype is that actually, not that you've underachieved, but you've achieved more than you should have.
Yes, exactly right. What
than you
is
are
it?
Entitled to or something.
That's exactly right. And so it's not, it is just wrapped in a different outfit that says Jews are even more of a problem because they assimilate, because they acculturate, because we don't know where they are, because they've infiltrated. And then the conspiracy theories start to grow. This idea of the neo-Nazis marching, saying Jews will not replace us. Well, of course, Jews are not going to replace everybody. We're a minority of a minority. This idea
that the last place you might want to go is to a Nazi party.
But this idea that because of Jewish power, the you know white nationalists will be replaced by everybody else who is brown. It's really complicated. And as I also said in my remarks, I really wish I became a professional in the Jewish community because I love being Jewish. I love talking about my mm-hmm. Jewish community and celebrating the beauty of the community. And so I lament the fact that oftentimes the conversation turns to anti-Semitism when one of the things we're going to be doing tonight with our Spirit and Place program is lifting up the beautiful diversity within the Jewish community. Like any community, people from the outside think it's monolithic, but as you scratch the surface, you realize there's diversity within every community, and that's no different in the Jewish community. And the thought that we are going to be lifting up the voices and perspective and experiences of members of our local Jewish community who are also Black and gay and Latino and immigrant and disabled is not only wonderful for the community at large, I think, to recognize how diverse the Jewish community is, but also for our own community. This is something that we're working on as a community as well, is recognizing the diverse experiences within our own community. And lifting that up is something to celebrate.
I want to pick up on something you said where, the concern is that Jews assimilate too successfully. How much of this, and it anticipates where I want to go, something Aviva said in the previous segment about the words somehow getting in the way, how much of this is also a misperception of what assimilation is or should be? I know long, long ago when I was in grad school, there was an intense debate about whether the whole, melting pot image of American culture was a fair one or whether we should be moving more to kind of a mosaic kind of imagery. But the idea of the melting pot, obviously, is that everyone kind of dissolves into one thing. And that having some sort of separate identity is within that larger whole is wrong. Is that part of the understanding here that if you're going to come to this country, you should immediately become in some ways subservient to the larger culture part of the problem? Aviva, you're leaning forward, so I'm talking.
So I will jump in here, and I will preface this with the fact that I've only been in this country for 10 years and that I am Canadian. So I come to it from a bit of a different perspective. But I will say there seems to be this misconception that somehow by carrying yourself as, a Jewish American or a Muslim American, that somehow by embracing your culture, there is like an anti-American sentiment. And I just think that's sad, and that couldn't be further from the truth. One of the things that we are going to be celebrating tonight is this intersection of mm-hmm. identities. And Aaron, Lindsay, and I had a chance to touch base, and we were talking about how, when frequently someone will come up to me and say, "You're Jewish? You don't look Jewish." So what does that mean to look Jewish? And what is that going to look like a generation from now? And I think the same conversation can be had with, well, you're American? You don't look American. Well, what does an American look like? Mm-hmm. I think the fact that we are becoming this beautiful woven tapestry of cultures and racial diversity and ethnic diversity and religious diversity is just something to be celebrated. And I hear the Canadian in me speaking when I say that I really do think it is something to be proud of and something to be celebrated, rather than allowing these barriers to break us down as a whole. And when I look at what's going on with the division in the country, it's breaking us down. It's rather than building us up.
I remember the reason I was chuckling when you said that is it was remembering an interview I read once with the late actor Paul Newman, who had a Jewish parent and a Catholic parent. And he said, the funny thing is no one ever comes up to me and says, you don't look Catholic.
Mm. Right.
Is part of that. So, Aaron, your thoughts on that, whether we misunderstand what the process of assimilation should be. And what the negotiation really should be with a larger culture.
Yeah, I think, again, Aviva said it so beautifully. But I really think that there's this part of us that being Jewish is so important. I wear it outwardly when I wear a Star of David or I have a Hebrew tattoo. All these things make me proud. And that doesn't negate my pride in being American or being a gay person. These are all different aspects of my identity, which is what I think is so beautiful about this theme of intersection for Spirit and Place this mm-hmm. year, is that it really allows us the opportunity to see ourselves and others. We were talking when we had lunch earlier today about how the Pittsburgh shooting felt to me, all of us as Jews, one way. But then we started breaking it down. And for me, it reminded me of the shooting after Pulse as a gay man, what that felt like. And I hadn't had that feeling since then. And then I felt it again when the shooting happened. And I think that to be able to understand our own identities, we have to really explore all these different pieces of each other.
So let me ask, Aaron, and if this question is too intrusive, but one of the things that I'm picking up here in some ways is that with your experience, you can almost feel doubly marginalized here. You know, is that a sense as part of all of, you know, the anti-gay bigotry, anti-Semitism, that you feel yourself being pushed into a position of being an outsider looking in?
I mean, yes. And I also feel doubly as uplifted. You know, when I meet a Jew who's also gay and Jewish, I there's a connection there that's double as strong. And I also get to see all the beautiful aspects of pride and the LGBT community and then Jewish pride and everything that we get at Hanukkah and all this fun celebration. So, you know, as much as there is this double marginalization, there's also the amplification of the uplifting within my identities.
So what do you hope will happen tonight at this event, Lindsay?
Well, I hope that whether you're a member of the Jewish community or a member of the broader community that comes to watch, you walk away saying, huh, I want to learn more. I want to open my eyes to look for the diversity within communities. And how great is it that the Jewish community was willing to put itself out a little bit and acknowledge some of the difficulty that someone who is Black and Jewish or gay and Jewish or Latino and Jewish or blind and Jewish, it deals with, you know, loving being Jewish, but also facing some of those additional challenges.
We are talking about the Spirit and Place Festival, specifically events that explore the Jewish faith. My guests are Lindsay Mintz and Aaron Welcher of the Jewish Community Relations Council and Cantor Aviva Merer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the annual Spirit and Place Festival, focusing our attention on events that explore and promote understanding of the Jewish faith and other faiths, the intersection of those faiths. My guests are Lindsay Mintz, executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Merer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, communications coordinator at the JCRC. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So we've been talking about, this question of the words getting in the way, and I want to pick up on one thing, and then we can move into other areas. It was a point that Aviva made in the first segment of the show when she talked about how you didn't like the word tolerance, that it was beyond that. And that struck a chord with me. In part, I remember long, long ago at a place where I was working, there was a requirement at one point that we all go through what they called diversity training at the time. And I thought, the nomenclature there actually just armed bigots.
Right.
That they say. And, my argument at the time was, let's call this what it is, decency training or courtesy training respect training or whatever. So I take your point. But on some of these discussions, what are other ways that the words get in the way for us? I'll start with you, Aviva, since you raised the point first.
Words get in the way. Interesting. For me, it's always just been, what does it mean to tolerate someone? Mm-hmm. That is just to put up with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that all that we are asking for? Wouldn't it be, as Aaron said so beautifully, wouldn't it be better to ask for empathy, understanding, or quite honestly, let's call it what it is, human decency and respect? As a clergy person, I want to help kind of shed light on Jews, who we are and what we stand for. And there's this famous story about a rabbi being asked to stand on one foot and explain the entire Torah, the five books of Moses. And the rabbi said, it's very simple. Ve'ahavta l'reyecha kamocha. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And that has been twisted and turned in every faith community, that do unto others as you would have done unto you. But really, this Judaism is where it originates, right? Do unto others the way you expect to be done unto yourself. And that is why tolerance for me is just such an understatement. It's not what we seek. I think it's the bare minimum, the low-hanging fruit, if you will, when it comes to human decency and respecting one another.
Lindsay.
I think it would be fascinating to have a whole show on the power of words, because I think they're hugely important. Words can be used to inspire people to do good things. Words can be used to inspire people to do bad things. And words have to be practiced. And thinking about how we use them. And it's okay to say tolerance and then say, oh, maybe I'll start using respect. I want to be in relationship with people so that they can come to me and say, help me understand your perspective there. Help me understand when I used this word, how did it make you feel? What should I do in the future? I can't have that conversation with somebody about the words they're using unless I have a relationship with them first. And that's critical. One thing that I shared in my remarks on Monday was how important it is for not just our faith leaders, our political leaders, our civic leaders to use their platform to use words that heal and bring people together, but that we all have a responsibility. It's not enough to say the people at the top need to be saying the right thing. When we hear or read or see an act of bigotry, no matter how small, we need each of us to be prepared for what we're going to say. What are the words we're actually going to use to stop it in its track? And I encouraged people to practice that, Literally mm-hmm. practice those words. Have the conversation over the dinner table. What would you say if somebody came up to you at school? Or even more importantly, if you saw it happen to somebody mm-hmm. else? Because chances are very few of us will be a perpetrator. Some of us will be a victim, but most everybody is a bystander at some point or another. And if you are going to be in that position, how do you, instead of being a bystander, be an upstander? What are you going to say, whether you're in sixth grade or 10th grade or at the water cooler in your office, when you hear a joke, when you see a meme come through your Facebook feed, when you see it happen, what are you going to say? What are the words you're going to use? And practice them.
So, you know, as I'm listening to you talk, Lindsay, and really all three of you, at some level it sounds like the primary challenge here is, and you know, simple does not always mean easy, unfortunately. They're not, they don't carry the same definition. But we're talking about education
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the primary mission for the JCRC?
Without a doubt. And it's something that we've been taking a more proactive role in the last few years. JCRC's, well, let me back up for a moment. The Jewish community in this country is very well organized, really globally mm-hmm. well organized. Lots of Jewish organizations doing lots of really great things, taking care of ourselves, taking care of the community at large. Philanthropy is a major part of how we express our Jewishness, taking care of the world and humanity. But JCRCs, and there are over 120 of them around the country, emerged during World War II in 1939, 1942, 1945, whereas most other Jewish organizations have birthdays around the turn of the century or the 1880s with the massive influx of Jews. The Jewish community recognized that it was not able to stop what was happening, what was unfolding in Europe, and that we needed to collect our voices together and better advocate, not just for ourselves. Yes, the never again is so there would never be another Holocaust, but never again for all people. And there's an aspect of enlightened self-interest there, which is we do this because we know that a society that is healthy, educated, employed, that respects diversity, is ultimately a society that is safer for the Jewish community to live and thrive in. But lifting up that that diversity as a strength is part of what Judaism is. I mean, one of the things I love to think about is a page of Talmud, and I would love for Cantor Meir to talk about this also, how within a single page of Jewish commentary, we see a multiplicity of voices and opinions and decisions. We want that diversity lifted up and celebrated, and it's the tone of the conversation more than the outcome that is when we are most living in the image of God. Am I?
Sure, absolutely. And you set me up beautifully, Lindsay, because what I will say is that we spoke at the top of the program about perhaps ignorance and misunderstanding mm-hmm. around Judaism. And it's just so important to understand that treating one another with dignity and accepting all peoples, regardless of race and background faith background, this is just a pillar of Judaism. So, for example, the pillar of Tikkun Olam, repairing the world. I mean, mm-hmm. we teach our children this from a very young age. The pillar of Gmilut Chasadim, acts of loving kindness. We believe that the world stands on this pillar of treating one another with acts of loving kindness. The pillar of B'Tselem Elohim. This is something that tells us that every single person on earth is created in the image of God. Not every single Jewish person on earth, every single person on earth. And when we are being true to our Jewish values and carrying ourselves in a way that is reflective of our faith, these are the pillars that we keep in mind. Haknasat Orchim, welcoming guests and dealing graciously with them. And then, of course, we read over and over again, we welcome the stranger because we know what it is to be the stranger. We were strangers in the land of Egypt. And, you know, historically, the Black community in this country and the Jewish community have stood side by side saying, you know, we get it. We get one another's struggles and stories, and we are there for one another. And I think immigrant communities and Muslim communities are standing side by side with us as well. Just last Monday, though, of course, we can't help but focus on the devastation of the shooting in Pittsburgh, I think it should also be brought to light that last Monday, Indianapolis Hebrew congregation was honored to be able to host a memorial for the 11 victims of the Pittsburgh shooting. And 1,500 people came, civic leaders and faith leaders of all backgrounds, and just people from the greater Indianapolis community crammed into our sanctuary and social hall to be able to stand up and say, this is not who we are. This is not reflective of who we are. So unfortunately, the angriest voices are usually the loudest. But I can't help but naively choose to believe that we as a country and as a greater human race are better than this.
So, and I want to pick up on this, on the theme of intersection, and it's something Aviva said, because, well, yes, often Jewish organizations and African-American organizations have marched side by side. There also have been friction points in history where, you know, there was resentment on one or both sides. You know, in an intersection, it's a really interesting image because it's one of those places where things come together, but it's also a place where collisions often happen. So I guess, Aaron, what are some of the ways out of this conversation that we can make sure that collisions don't happen, or at least minimize the damage that happens when they do?
Yeah, definitely. I think that collisions are definitely always going to happen. That is part of building relationships. That is the difficult, the hard part of relationship building, and it's something that you have to own. At the same time, part of relationship building is knowing how to navigate those difficult conversations, be able to express when you're hurt in a way that really helps move past that collision point so that you're able to build new paths and new connections. I think that time and time again, we have seen plenty of moments where there are tensions, and we've been able to work through that with our partners and other communities because we're able to sit down and express our own humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's key to being able to avoid those, is really being able to express your humanity.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Carl via Twitter. And again, if you want to join this conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Carl asks, nuts and bolts question. I have heard from millennials that the term Jew is derogatory. True or false? I don't want to use a word that is no longer acceptable. Ira Glass was even confused by it.
So I wanted to jump in here because I used the word Jew twice in this, just this conversation. And I will say that, in my opinion, the word Jew is only derogatory when you look at it through an anti-Semitic lens. Mm-hmm. I am Jew-ish, right? What does that mean? But I am Jewish, sure. I practice the Jewish faith. But I am a Jew, and I'm a proud Jew. I'm an Indian Jew. It is part of who I am. I don't think anyone would be afraid to stand up and say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim. Jew-ish to me feels like I'm softening it for your convenience. I'm a Jew, and it really is only derogatory when you look at it through the lens of anti-Semitic speech.
Might add, since we've had an awful lot of talk about semantics too, that it is important when you're using it as a modifier to use Jew-ish,
rather than
simply go with the other. You know, go ahead, Lindsay.
Well, you had asked earlier if all of this comes down to education.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is yes. I think if no matter what field you're in, if there's a part of you that feels like you are an educator, you're doing something right. And I certainly feel like even though we're an intergroup relations and interfaith relations arm and an advocacy arm of the Jewish community, at the core, what I'm doing is giving people an opportunity to broaden their empathy, their understanding, and learn. We have launched a program just this past year called Stand Up, Speak Out, which has a series of programs under it. It's an initiative geared toward empowering young Jews to find their voice, to begin to articulate what it means for them to be Jewish, to feel comfortable having that conversation in public, and training them to have conversations. There's one of the programs is called Student to Student, where we train Jewish high school students to feel comfortable talking and describing their Jewish practice. And there's a lot of diversity within the Jewish community. And then we offer these groups of Jewish teens in groups of three to go into classrooms and high schools around Greater Indianapolis that don't have a Jewish presence. Oftentimes, it'll be the first time that somebody maybe has ever met or spoken to someone who's Jewish. It's a win-win-win because for the Jewish teens, it helps them gain that confidence to say, I am a Jew and I'm proud to be Jewish. And I don't drive on Shabbat, but my friend over here does, and we're both Jewish. And for the non-Jewish high school students who get a chance to ask that question that they've never been able to ask or to meet somebody Jewish, so that when they go back and say, you know, I met somebody Jewish, and I don't think that's that sounds like a stereotype to me and it doesn't sit well with me. So education is at the core, and we are educating both the Jewish and non-Jewish community about who we are.
We're getting close on time now, and I do want, since really what's happening tonight is going to be a continuation of this conversation we're having right now. If people want to attend the event tonight, where, how, all of that? I think, Aaron, they threw it to you the first time.
Yeah, definitely. So tonight at 6:30, doors will open at the Central Library. We will be doing it in the Clues Auditorium. There will be six speakers with intersecting Jewish identities. And then there will be a question and answer session afterwards with a dessert reception to follow. So it will be a great time to get to know the speakers personally and the Jewish community better.
Is there any cost to attend or
it
anything?
It is completely free.
Go ahead, Aviva.
Sorry, I just want to say that in a week that has been difficult and devastating for our community and the greater American community, please do join us for what really ought to be a celebration of who we are as a people. And we're proud to bring you this exciting program. So think of it as an opportunity to come and embrace learning about the other.
That will have to be the last word. I would like to thank my guests, Lindsay Mintz, Executive Director of the Jewish Community Relations Council, Cantor Aviva Mehrer of the Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation, and Aaron Welcher, Communications Coordinator at JCRC. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.